Melnick in the Afternoon. Listen live weekdays from 3 to 7 on TSN 690.
In New York City for the Senators and Rangers tonight. Talk about what happened last night. Talk about what might happen tonight at the Bell Center. Here he is from TSN, hockey analyst Ray Ferraro. How are you?
I'm doing good. I always like coming to the city, even though, as I told Rod, I did not do anything here. It's always entertaining, even a cab ride in from the airport.
Yeah, you get energized, don't you, just for being in the middle of it.
It's I would say the two places I've been that are like this are here and Vegas. I mean, can you ever stroll through the airport in Vegas?
I've never been.
Oh,
so
my
Gallo,
gosh.
Gallo, you can answer that.
Yeah, well, you can't. You hop and you're excited.
But you can't. There's just even try to just like walk slowly, and pretty soon I'm like, I'm missing three hands of blackjack. I got to get going.
Gallo can vouch for that. That's the way I am in New York City. He's like you trying to keep pace when Miller's got his lean going. That's me in New York with Gallo trailing.
Well, we're going. Gordon and I are walking over to the rink. It's a nice day here. It's not raining yet. It looks like it's going to. But so Gord says, well, let's leave at 4:45. I'm like, yeah, you'll make it in 15 minutes. I'll be 5 minutes behind you. We got to go at 4:40. I can't.
Yeah,
I can't
little legs. So we were kicking this around. As bad as it was for the Canadiens a few years ago, it's not that ancient history when they were sliding to the bottom of the East. In the end, it worked out well for the organization. It had to happen for them to bottom out. But the worst that the fans got, I can't imagine a Montreal Canadiens jersey flying through the air at the Bell Center. I just can't picture that. This is umpteen times this has happened now in Toronto. You spoke to it a little bit on the broadcast last night. You've given it some more thought. What does this say about where the Leafs are?
Well, I think what it says is there is a lifetime of people that have seen no success in Toronto. They've had virtually nothing to cheer about since 1993 when they, you know, when Doug Gilmour had their magical run to the semifinals and they lost to Wayne Gretzky in Game 7 at Madison Square Garden. The Kings went on to lose to the Canadiens. And so I see there's like this couple of things, pent-up frustration, pent-up anger, just tired of the same old, and maybe a little peek into what the next couple of years look like, which is unless there is some kind of dramatic, grace from the gods, they're in this still. I mean, how and where are they going to get better? They're not bad enough unless they somehow get the greatest luck ever in the lottery. They're not bad enough to get a high pick, like a high pick. They're going to win some games. They're going to score some goals, even though they're not right now. They're going to draft 10th or 12th. They're not going to draft third. And so now they've got to offload a bunch of terrible contracts. And the guys that are tradable, you know, the teams that are taking these calls are saying, well, that's great. We'll take the contract, and we're not giving you anything back for it. Not anything you want, anyway. So they're in trouble in Toronto. They really are. And I get the fans' frustration. There's no thought whatsoever. The guy runs down the glass and throws a jersey over. He's not thinking somebody's going to get hurt. But I'd like to, he should be driving in his car and I'll just throw a sweater in front of his car window and see how he reacts. You know, if you're going 20 miles an hour, what if you make a mistake? You run your car into a guardrail. I mean, a guy's going 20 miles an hour. He steps on a jersey. He can't stop. Throw it during the stoppage, if you so are so inclined. But during the play the first couple I didn't say anything because I don't want anyone to get any notoriety for throwing it. You know, it's like the streaker at a baseball game. Like, you don't show them anyway. I don't agree with it during the play. I mean, the guy can do whatever he wants. He paid his money. Go ahead. You know, maybe it makes you feel self-important for a moment, but they're just in such a world of hurt right now that I don't see any solution of quick order in Toronto.
You know, they chanted "Fire Wilson," and that seemed to be the last straw for Brian Burke. That's a little more creative and a little more healthy in terms of angst and getting it out of your system. If they did chant something, I mean, they've already got a coach fired. Nonis is like this is the confusion from outside looking into Toronto. Dave Nonis has a very mixed record at best as general manager, yet he's still doing his job, apparently. The same guy who is at least partly responsible for the problems that the Leafs are having on the ice, is he being asked to help this team? The same guy? Like, how do they go about improving if part of the problem is still there?
Well, I would say part of it is that Brendan Shanahan is, you know, from the president's position, has remade much of the front office, and so, you know, he takes over. And, you know, his job post-retirement, of course, has been deciding how many games somebody gets suspended. It's never been, he's had zero management experience. And I don't think that can be overlooked. So while he fired Dave Poulin and he fired Claude Loisel, you know, he brought in Kyle Dubas and now he's brought in Mark Hunter as director of player personnel. Dubas is the analytics guy. He's the, you know, his assistant manager who's working for Dave Nonis. He kept an experienced hand. I get that. It's like Mark Bergevin keeping Rick Dudley and Larry Carrier. I get that. Those are experienced hockey guys in management, and you keep them and you lean on them. However, it's not a convoluted work pyramid. Bergevin is at the top of it. In Toronto, Dave Nonis is not at the top of the work pyramid. Brendan Shanahan is. Well, that's fine if he's the general manager, but he's not. So what does Dave do? Like, you know, they say, oh, no, Dave's running the team. I don't believe he's running it independently for a second. And so it's any foundation that doesn't have clear roles or defined jobs for everybody, I don't see how it's possibly successful.
So you mentioned the fact that they're not going to get a top 10 pick, and I'm looking at the other teams, Ray, that the Leafs will be competing with for the next 5 years that you mentioned. And, you know, like the Bruins drafted Bergeron, Krejci, and Lucic all in the second round, and the Canadiens drafted Gallagher and Plekanec in the fifth round, and Pacioretty was 21, and PK Subban was in the second round. And don't even get me started about the development that the Tampa Bay Lightning have done with their players. The Leafs have, like, two players on their roster that they've drafted. Why have they not done anything between the second and fifth rounds of drafts?
I have no idea how you can swing and miss as often. But if I didn't have any idea there, I could also look in Edmonton and see the same thing. And maybe it's quite predictable that the teams are in the places that they are. Now, the Leafs were throwing around second-round draft picks in trades like nickels for years. Oh, here's a second-rounder. We'll take that guy. Here's, you know, Brian Leetch and Ron Francis and, you know, guys that were so far past their best on dates, Hall of Fame players, but they were just so far past where they were going to be able to make impact. And at the time, they just threw the second rounder out. Here you go. Here's another one. Well, that's continued on. Then they get into the first round. You can go even into the first round. A couple years ago, they drafted Tyler Biggs. They moved up to take Biggs, I think, at number 22. And he's been in the East Coast League. They drafted Frédéric Gauthier, who plays in the Quebec League. He was on Team Canada. In my opinion, he projects as a number four centerman.
Yep.
But that's their first-round pick. Their scouting has been dreadful, and that's why Mark Hunter has been hired as director of player personnel, like the head of scouting for them. And they don't have a chance until that turns around. They really don't. I mean, there's... You can trade and sign a free agent here and there, and, oh, hey, that's a, you know, I'm in New York tonight. Dan Girardi was an unrestricted free agent. For crying out loud, he's a cornerstone of their defense. You can do that once in a while, and you can, you know, you can pat yourselves on the back, but unless you draft and draft a great many options in your system, you don't have a chance.
Ray, in New York City, where the Rangers are hosting the Ottawa Senators, while the Canadiens are hosting Peter Laviolette and the Predators.
Yeah, you know, Barry did an amazing job here, and you can see that translate to Washington right now. I think every coach is a little bit different. Ultimately, systems, I don't really think they win and lose hockey games. I think the players that play the system, whatever it might be, how hard they play it, how much they buy into it, how well they execute any system. That usually determines the outcome of a game.
Oh, interesting comments from the always fiery Peter Laviolette, who certainly thinks offense more so than a lot of other coaches. Almost seems like the perfect trade, right, Ray? Barry Trotz, a structure, getting an offensive team that can't go anywhere to learn to play both ends of the ice, and Peter Laviolette taking over a very structured team and teaching them to go for it a little more often.
It really was. And there's another, you know, to Peter's point about the players, and you have to have the right players. So in Washington, a team that can't defend, they go out in the summer and they spend a gazillion dollars on Brooks Orpik and Matt Niskanen. And they, for right now, they've done a terrific job. Now, I don't know how those contracts are going to play out in 3 years. But for right now, what Trotz, as it turned out to be, needed was better defense and better goaltending. And Braden Holtby has been fantastic in goal for Washington. Conversely, in Nashville, where they haven't been able to score for forever, the first thing they get back is Pekka Rinne. If Pekka Rinne was there last year, maybe Barry Trotz isn't fired in Nashville. Now, he's out of the lineup. You'll get, I think Carter Hutton is playing tonight. That's not apple to apple there. That's, you know, I mean, you're taking a step down to Carter Hutton from one of the league's most valuable players this year. But up front, you know, they get highly motivated and almost desperate Mike Ribeiro, who's on a one-year deal and having a fantastic year. Philip Forsberg's, you know, a front runner for the rookie of the year. James Neal comes in the trade for Patrick Hornquist. Colin Wilson, who was a first-round pick years ago, I think maybe 2008, has, you know, has really blossomed for the first time. Maybe the change of coaches has really helped him out. And so you've got guys that can score. And so both coaches got players that could help them implement the systems that they both believe in.
Now, you talk about the goaltending. Certainly, Hutton, he got yanked against the Red Wings. And the problem is when you play behind somebody like Pekka Rinne, you're hardly going to play. It's really tough to be a backup to when Pekka Rinne is healthy. But let's assume at playoff time he is healthy again. This is a scary team. I know there are a lot of those teams that kind of look similar in terms of if you're an opponent, you're going, oh, my goodness, it's the Blues, it's the Blackhawks, it's the Ducks, the Predators. I mean, you think, okay, they're going to slow down a little bit without Rennie, which might happen, but in terms of at playoff time, this is a scary team. It's deep.
It becomes more scary. A team like Nashville becomes more scary, almost like Montreal, in a seven-game series than over the course of a season. And one of the reasons, you know, is the guy that stands between the pipes. Like, are you going to have a clunker of a series from Price or Rennie? I don't see it. Might get a bad game here and there, but they're just too good. And so beating them takes on an extra challenge because it's night after night after night against the same guy. The Nashville defense would concern me if you're playing against them because they're incredibly mobile. They have five really mobile guys and Anton Volchenkov, who's there to kill penalties and block shots, and he's kind of their, you know, their biggest, heaviest defender. But Matthias Ekholm, I don't know if you guys have seen him much. Man, that guy can play, and he can skate. Nobody talks about him because they're busy talking about Seth Jones and of course, Shea Weber. But Ryan Ellis is having a terrific year for them as well. So all of a sudden, you got these guys that get up into the rush, and they support these forwards that can now score. They play, like, I would be shocked if tomorrow we had a chat and you said, wow, that was really boring at the Bell Center. I don't think so for a second. That will be fast tonight.
I think it was the longest I've been center in two and a half years. So, and I feel comfortable, but there's still obviously areas I would need to work on. And but I mean, I like the experience. And I'm here as a player. I don't make decisions. I'm just happy to play anywhere.
After the skate this morning, Alex Galchenyuk, who had gone nine games without a goal, was getting banged around quite a bit physically deep in the opponent's zone. They moved him back to the wing, promptly scores a big goal against Yaroslav Halak. David Desharnais back in the middle, has a big game. This is really interesting. I don't know, Ray, if you've seen this before, a contending team that has a young star player, and he's moving back and forth as you know what the end game is eventually as a centerman, but in the meantime, back and forth like this.
I'm sure it causes some discomfort for fans to see this and to, as you say, you know, you realize what, in all likelihood, the end game is. The fact that he can do it, that he can go back and forth, that there is versatility to him, is a great card for the coach to have. And what Michel Therrien tried was, hey, we needed a pop in the middle of the ice. We needed some size. Can Galchenyuk help us out? He plays in there. And then what you find out, and that you can't find out if he's playing the wing, is how does he handle all the extra workload down low? Because that can kill your offense. Because by the time, you know, players that play both, a lot of times they like center more because you can play on the move a little bit. You know, you get the puck, you're moving, you don't get it on the board standing still and then have to get going. But when you're in the middle, a lot of times, especially nowadays, there is so much grind below below the hash marks, but it's even lower than that. A lot of times you're behind the play, and when you get the puck in the middle of the ice, you distribute it to the wingers. So you're not the guy shooting it. And Galchenyuk has that great weapon, which is his shot. And maybe right now he's better suited to get rid of the puck, like to shoot it on the wing. And so I can't think of too many guys that have that versatility that early in their career. You know, again, I'm in Ottawa, and or in New York for Ottawa. Curtis Lazar is scratched tonight. I think most people see him as a center, but, you know, he's had better success on the wing in junior, and maybe he'll be one of those guys that bounces back and forth till he's 22, 23, 24 years old until he can establish himself in the middle. And that's kind of where I see Galchenyuk's road winding towards.
So, Ray, you know, last time I went to Las Vegas, before the last shift I had here, before I left for vacation, I don't want to say I mailed it in, but I was thinking ahead to vacation. This is the Canadiens' last game before a long break after the All-Star break. How does that work exactly for a player that's about to leave?
Oh, different for everybody. There'll probably be a few players that are packed already. And, the only thing they're going to do in the morning is put their shaving kit in their bag and head to the airport. There are others that, you know, they're really good at pushing that stuff to the next page. You know, they'll worry about that after the game. But it's a concern for both teams. You know, I mean, each team can't wait to get to the break. You know, I mean, Ottawa's got a game tomorrow night, so their guys maybe aren't thinking about it as much. Although, I saw a couple guys come into the hotel today, and they had gone shopping a little bit, the guys do in New York, and a little bit of the stuff is headed towards the break. You know, it's impossible to just, you know, you had to plan the trip, you had to book it, you had to make arrangements, so you're already thinking about it a little bit. And my experience is the things you check first on your schedule are Christmas and All-Star breaks, and to see when they are, because you look forward to them so much. And it's part of being a pro, I guess, is to, you know, to really lock down until you get there. I always felt if you could keep your head about you from the Christmas break right past the All-Star break, there's a whole bunch of points there. While some teams fall asleep, you can put them in your pocket, because you're going to catch teams that these are the doldrum days, man, until the weather turns a little bit. Some teams just fall asleep, and I guess Toronto's a great example of it. I mean, the teams are walking through there and just pulling points out of there like it's candy right now.
Tweet of the day from at Richard Kruk. Honestly, I thought losing Brunt would make the show suck, but Ferraro is a guy. Almost wish he was a Hab for 1 year.
Me too.
Yeah, me too. You might have a couple of rings, huh?
It was Thrashers or Habs, and I trust me, it was... If the option was Habs, there would have been no decision.
In New York City tonight, it's a staggered start. They start at 7, so you'll be able to watch both games tonight. Talk to you on Thursday. Thanks, as always.
Hey, take care, guys. Have a great couple days.
Melnick in the Afternoon. Listen live weekdays from 3 to 7 on TSN 690.